This is the first time we've ever had someone on the show in an interview style, as opposed to just more of a narrative, you know, with music and the citations, kind of advancing the case, answering the questions. We start from scratch in solving JFK, but this is a bonus episode because we want to talk about the JFK Records Act and the recent JFK records releases. And I thought, who better to have on to talk about that than attorney Mark Adamczyk, who is an expert on the JFK Records Act.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton.
Mark, what started your interest in the Kennedy assassination?
Well, thanks, Matt. I'm happy to be your first guest, and I'm sure you'll have many others. I really respect what you're doing, and these types of this media is really important to get folks more educated on what's going on and why this stuff still matters. I was born in Massachusetts. My dad, you know, was an Irish Catholic, and he respected John F. Kennedy very much. And he taught me a lot, you know, growing up about, you know, the Kennedy presidency. And then, of course, we started talking about the assassination and the doubts that he had. And when did Oliver Stone's film come out? 1991. So I was 13 years old, and I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies growing up. I was kind of sheltered, but I was allowed to watch that one. And it really showed me a different perspective on what may have happened to JFK. Then I just started reading books. Every Christmas and birthday, I got a new book as a gift from my parents, whether it was, you know, conspiracy or a lone nut, you know, type publication. And I just absorbed everything that I could, and it became I wouldn't say an obsession, but a fascination. That there could be, you know, more to the story. And I had a gut feeling that that was the case.
I love hearing everybody's different JFK assassination sort of discovery stories and how they came to it. And it was a big thing in 1991. The movie JFK coming out really is the thing that led to this act, to the Records Act. So that was a huge thing. You are an expert in the JFK Records Act in terms of, you know, there's not that many people who know a lot about it because it's not really applicable to people unless you're an attorney who's very interested in the JFK assassination. So, and then just taking the time to go down that path and study it. How'd you get involved with knowing so much about the Records Act? And maybe if you want to tell our audience a little bit about what the JFK Records Act is.
Sure. So I mentioned how I really went down the rabbit hole and reading every book that I could, and I learned a lot about the case and had my, you know, questions one way or the other. Then about 6 years ago, I decided, what can I do about it? I said, I'm going to go to Dallas and I'm going to try to, I went to a conference, the Kappa, actually at the time there was a Lancer and a Kappa conference, and I went to both of them. And I said, I'm going to try to meet some folks, because I had really drilled down on the JFK Records Act. And I thought, let me try to tell people about why this law is so important and what can be done about it. What I first did in 2018, I volunteered for Russ Baker's organization, but he was at that conference, and we talked about when they started first releasing some documents, even though, you know, Trump did what he did, and we can talk about that. There were some releases, and I literally looked at 2,000-3,000 records and organized them into a spreadsheet on what was new, what was already released that really wasn't new. And so to answer your question, I wanted to do something about it, because I feel like the only thing that's relevant right now, making sure that, you know, the American public had transparency, and what could I do about that? The Records Act is it's a groundbreaking statute, and there's no way that it would have made its way into law without that movie. And that's kind of fascinating, right? Because, you know, you go back to the 70s and 80s and 90s and all this interest on the assassination and reinvestigations and whatever. But then when that movie came out, there was hundreds of thousands of Americans, and not just Americans, international citizens, that put pressure on Congress to do something about it. Because at the end of the of that movie, if you look at the epilogue, I think it's called, you'll see that, you know, that the files of the House Select Committee of Assassinations won't be available until 2029. And people are like, okay, I just saw this movie that presents an alternate theory, but I can't see my government's records for, you know, another, I guess from that point would have been, what, 50, 60 years? And
yeah,
that really was powerful.
The act, the JFK Records Act, so it created the Assassination Records Review Board.
Yep.
And they were around from 1994 to 1998. And they basically they gathered documents that were related to the case. They had subpoena authority, and yep, they could go and depose people and bring people in, you know, for sworn statements, yep, depositions, basically. That's my understanding of it. And, you know, can you tell us a little bit more about the sort of the ARRB, kind of what, yeah, you know about it and what it was able to get done?
Yeah, no. Yeah. So backing up, that's a great point, Matt. That was the first legitimate body that had the ability to do anything about the records. It was an independent board of 5 members, led by Judge John Thunheim, who's still a federal judge in Minnesota. And they had a staff, and their mandate was to declassify in accordance with the JFK Records Act, which said everything should be released unless you find clear and convincing evidence from an agency that there's a specific reason under the act where postponement would still be necessary as of 1992. That's the crazy thing about this. You're talking about 30 years ago, that Congress had already had enough, and they passed such a powerful law that they empowered the ARRB to declassify everything then, unless there was a compelling reason. And they had, like you said, Matt, they had serious power to subpoena, to take depositions, to make sure that a document that an agency wanted withheld, that there was a legitimate reason. The problem is that they only were in office, they only were in business for 4 years. They did declassify about 5 million pages of assassination records. They did a tremendous job. But what happened was that agencies, namely the CIA, FBI, Secret Service, whoever else, kind of, you know, waited them out a little bit, if you will. They knew that they would only have a certain shelf life. And then when the ARRB made final recommendations for declassification, and if they agreed through a negotiation that a document or a certain set of documents could be withheld for another 5-10 years, they put that in a recommended release date. And then the problem is, from 98, early 99, when the ARRB ran its course, until 2017, there wasn't enough oversight on their recommendations and the job that they had done. And that's why we're still fighting to get these records to this day.
So basically, 1998, the ARRB's disbanded, and they issued a final report, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then there's all these, there's like a list of documents with a schedule that, you know, recommended schedule for when they're supposed to be released. And then all the remainder of the documents that weren't released before October 2017 were supposed to have been released in October 2017, right?
Yeah. And the way, you know, if I recommend anybody that wants to really drill down on this, that the ARRB final report that you mentioned is really essential reading. Because you'll see exactly how they left it. They okay, did a ton of work, but there was still work to be done. The crux of it is there had to have been a living agent, sources and methods, an identifiable harm to the military, defense, law enforcement, that would eventually be a non-factor where they could release those records. So that's how it's supposed to play out. And everybody focuses on 2017. In my opinion, there should have been, the way the statute reads, an ongoing obligation of agencies and the archivists to keep releasing records as those reasons for postponement would become moot.
So they did have some releases between 1998 and 2017, though, correct? I believe, right?
Very, very, very few.
Okay. So yeah. 2017, that was the biggest release since 1998.
Yeah, but what they did, so I mentioned I volunteered for Russ Baker's organization, and we started looking at what was re-released in 2017 and 2018 to satisfy the media and researchers that something was done. I can tell you, having looked at thousands of those, a lot of them were re-released in the same form they were released in the 90s to the ARB, or there was maybe one or two redactions removed. And it's kind of like a shell game. It's just like kicking the can down the road. So what happened in 2017, 2018 was insignificant, and it continues to this day.
Yeah. So October 2017,
yeah,
Trump is supposed to release any document that wouldn't, there's a standard of, what's the standard? It wouldn't cause harm to, current operations or any living assets or sources and methods. That's the big one that they cite. Okay. And so then they decided, no, we need more time. We're just not going to follow the law. Right. Is that, there's something called the Gannon memo, which I think you told me about. And I looked that up today, and basically, they just said, look, here's the law. But we're not going to do that. Is that, I mean, am I simplifying? I mean, it seems like they're just not following the law, because the law is, they're supposed to basically provide a log of all the withheld documents, and then sort of a basis, kind of like in the legal world, like a privilege log.
Right.
Not the exact same standard, but is that kind of what happened, or am I mischaracterizing that?
No, not at all. So what the Records Act requires, and it has required this since 1992, for any postponement that was authorized by the ARB, there was supposed to be an identification aid. And that's a form that ARB created that says, okay, if you're gonna keep this record postponed, there needs to be a specific reason disclosed to the archivist, and event, because the ARB went out of business in 1998. But that document should have survived and been in the Federal Register, where President Trump at the time would have had an easy decision to say, okay, here's the reason for postponement. It's in the act, like you said, a living agent, sources and methods, identifiable harm to national, I don't even like to use the word national security, because that term became outdated in the JFK Act. No longer could a president or an executive agency say, well, national security, we're going to keep this secret. That was an archaic notion that the JFK Records Act, specifically with regard to the JFK assassination records, dispelled of. There's five things in Section 6 of the JFK Act that would allow an agency to continue to justify postponement. And that had to be based on clear and convincing evidence. And then the president can make a decision on a specific record, not a batch of records, on the justification that it's necessary to keep, these records as a whole or as a group protected by national security. So that's the way it was supposed to work. The problem was, and you raised the Gannon memo, when Trump made his decision, and we don't know exactly how that happened, but we know that he was going to release everything, and at the 11th hour he said, no, we're gonna wait a little bit, right? And then the acting assistant attorney general, Curtis Gannon, wrote a memo that is, now you can find it online, that that kind of gave, well, no, it didn't kind of give, it gave Trump and now Biden plausible grounds to not worry about that record by record analysis. But they're supposed to make a record by record determination. Uh-huh. And that's not been done even to this day.
Do we have a list of all the documents? Like, you know, they say, well, there's the, you know, whatever, there's about 3,000 that they've still withheld. How do we know there's 3,000 just because they told us that number? Or do we know what, like, yeah, are there document numbers and we know that it's this document, this document, this document, and this document, or we don't even know anything at all about?
No, because that's why NARA, the National Archives and Records Administration, needs to be accountable. Because there's a specific collection of records that were supposed to, that the ARRB collected and analyzed in the 90s, right? Those were turned over to the archivists, and then they had to go through that record by record, you know, certification and analysis. So there should be a list of records saying this is the reason that an agency requested postponement. NARA agreed with it. Biden agreed with it, whoever was the president at the time. And this is why this cannot be released at this time. And you should be able to go to NARA's website and see those records and the identification aid. And then you know that there's some transparency mm-hmm. on the withheld records and that it complies with the statute. But who knows what the number is? You know, it's.
So kind of in a way, you could say that the statute lacks teeth because there's not really an enforcement mechanism. And then, all right, so Biden just did the most recent release, and he released around 13,000 and released that they withheld around 3,000 approximately ballpark. Well, we'll talk in a little bit about the corporate media's coverage of this release. But in terms of the release itself, how did it pan out versus your expectations of it? Is it about what you thought? I know, obviously, we haven't seen any of the documents themselves. That's a whole different volume. We're talking about 13,000. And when we say a document, that could be many pages, right? It's not necessarily just one page. Right. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay.
Your thoughts on the Biden release?
It's kind of what I predicted. It's really hard to, you know, justify what's been done. What Biden did was, even in my opinion, worse than what Trump did, because last September, Biden was under, you know, pressure to release these records, and he kicked the can down the road until December 15, 2022. And if you look at that executive memorandum from last September, it basically says, I'm going to release everything unless you, agency, tell me that you're not ready. And here's why. And you let me know when you're ready. Like, that's completely contrary to what the JFK. And you made a good point. Like, does the JFK Records Act have teeth? It absolutely does. There's provisions in there for judicial review, Administrative Procedures Act review. When a government agency doesn't do their job under a federal statute, which they have not, that there are legal remedies, and that's what this lawsuit is about, that's been filed. It was filed in October. So what I thought was going to happen on Thursday is exactly what happened. There was going to be a new release. You can say release. You got to go and look and see what was released. Were they in the collection already? And were they re-released with maybe one less redaction, or were they released in full? And then you got to ask yourself, if it was released in full, why in the heck did it take 5 years mm-hmm. from the October 2017 deadline? Is there anything in there that even justified continued postponement?
Yeah.
And the court has to look at that. I understand protecting sources and methods and living agents and all that, but you're talking 60 years. And that's really what's troubling, is how do you reconcile the government's continued reliance on those theories and conclusions, and then still withhold 4,000 plus records, you know?
Right. If so Mary Farrow litigation's ongoing right now, if that doesn't work out, are there other avenues that can be, where are we left?
you know, you're still looking at another, you know, several thousand batch of documents. And, you know, what's the remedy? Hopefully the Mary Farrell Foundation is phenomenal. Their purpose for decades has been, you know, full transparency. They have a way better a catalog of assassination records than NARA does. We know that. But you know, that's an organization that should be able to take this to the finish line. You just never know what a court's going to do. My personal opinion, and I hope at some point this happens, is that Congress, much like they did on the heels of the JFK movie, is they exercise oversight. They say, okay, what are we doing here? You know, there's still, you know, several thousand documents that our government says one thing, but they won't release everything. Like, get a new ARRB or something similar that has legitimate legal authority to, you know, grill these people as to why. Because the president has authority under the JFK Records Act to make a decision, but that has to be based on the evidence from the agency as to why postponement is still necessary. We still haven't seen any of that.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. So visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, but this guy that I know, let's just say, is. So whether you're like me or the guy I know, or you're really into weed, whatever it is, you're about to nerd out big because there's this company called Mood.com, that's changing the way people buy cannabis. Here's the science, and this is the part I love. The reason different cannabis strains make you feel different ways isn't just about THC. It's also based on other components called terpenes. Terpenes influence how your bud tastes and smells, but they also affect what you feel. So one terpene might make you feel uplifted and energetic, and another one makes you relaxed and sleepy. There are dozens of these, so when you have the right combination of terpenes, you can feel social, focused, creative, aroused, chilled out, or whatever. You just go to mood.com, click Shop by Mood, and that's it. Want to be more social at a party? There's flower for that. Need to focus and get more work done? There's flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and comes in a discreet box. Best of all, everything is backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code JFK. So head to mood.com and get 20% off of your first order with code JFK.
The good news this time around is that this batch of documents being released seems to have really gotten the attention of the media. First, just I want to talk about Jefferson Morley. I've never met Jefferson, but I've been following his work for a long time. And he's a former Washington Post national security reporter. He's a guy that's super serious and credible, is how I would describe him. He's involved with Mary Farrell. Is he on the board?
Yes,
I think he is. He had a press conference at the National Press Club last week, shortly before the records were released. They got a lot of news coverage. It was pretty interesting. And basically what he said is that he believes there is a document that's being withheld, and the exact way that that he has evidence of this, I'm still a little cloudy about. Maybe you could fill in more if you know. But he says there's a document withheld within the Joannides files. There's 44 documents. And one of those documents shows that Lee Harvey Oswald was working as at least an asset in some capacity for the CIA when he was in New Orleans in the summer of 1963, the whole Fair Play for Cuba thing. And he's sort of going around very publicly, you know, just being kind of obnoxious with his support of Castro there on the streets. There's Jefferson Morley says there's a document that will show that this was a CIA operation and Oswald was a CIA asset. That's a really significant smoking gun to me in terms of Oswald's CIA ties. Now, you could always say he's still a lone gunman, and the scandal is that he was involved with the CIA and sort of one of their own turned on him. You could always, I understand that argument can be made, but it's intensely denied on the Facebook forums I go to by people who believe the Warren Report that Oswald's tied to intelligence. They deny that just as strong as they deny a shot from the front.
Right. So
I thought that was a big deal. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what Jefferson had to say about that.
I've always had a lot of respect for Jeff's efforts on this. He spent the better part of 20 years of his professional career. He literally sued the CIA individually. And that takes a lot of fortitude, and he does know what he's talking about. You can look at what Oswald did in the summer of 63. You can look at 544 Cam Street and all that stuff, but eventually he became more public. And that public persona, legend, if you will, had to do with Oswald being an alleged, sole member of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee in New Orleans that was interacting with the anti-Castro Cubans in New Orleans. And it gave him a public stage, so to speak, as the pro-Castro communists that he was painted to be on the afternoon of November 22nd. Yes, you mentioned 44 records that are still had not been made available. And that's, I think that's a major reason for the continued withholding of documents.
You know, what we try to do on the podcast is go issue by issue. Right now we're very early on, right? We're just on, could Oswald have been in place? And we got through, where was he before? What's the testimony say? Where was he afterwards? So this is all getting to stuff that's down the road. So definitely a spoiler alert on this stuff. So Jefferson Morley, his press conference, it did inspire some news coverage. I want to say there was maybe a Politico piece about it. What I found to be wild was the news coverage on the day of the actual disclosures, December 15th. In particular, there's two news clips I want to talk about. One would be MSNBC. So on Morning Joe, they have their panel, and one of their panelists is Michael Beschloss, who's sort of the official NBC News historian. I listen to and watch, consume all the different news channels, MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, just to kind of see kind of what they're saying. You know, generally, NBC in particular, for a long time, has been pretty pro Warren Report. What Beschloss says is he points out two things. J. Edgar Hoover knew that Oswald was in that building where the parade route was going, and he failed to notify the Secret Service why he should have been prosecuted. So, wow, you've got corporate news calling for the prosecution of the guy that still got his name on the building. So that I thought that was pretty fascinating. And then he goes, he antes up another level, and he goes, also, why is Oswald, who's supposed to be a lone wolf, talking to the CIA in October and November in Dallas? Most people aren't talking to the CIA who live in Dallas. Why would Oswald be? So that was just wild, because again, he's speaking in terms of like it's a resolved issue that Oswald had intelligence contacts, when my understanding of most people who say the Warren Report got it right their position is not that. Anybody who feels very strongly that the Warren report is correct generally has the position that no, of course, Oswald was not an intelligence contact. You now have Beschloss, the official NBC News historian, saying that he was talking to the CIA in October and November. The way that was covered by the Morning Joe panel is that they acted like they were getting this information from the releases as if it was breaking news. But to my knowledge, there's not like some new release on those two issues. It just felt weird how like the tone all of a sudden changed.
Don't forget then when Oswald was arrested in New Orleans for a minor misdemeanor, the first thing he did when he got into custody after a very minor incident was he asked to meet with an FBI agent in New Orleans and they talked for about an hour. So who gets that, you know, that kind of coverage and access?
That would have been a hell of a podcast, I bet.
Yeah.
They should have recorded it. Mics.
Yeah. Well, they didn't record anything. Even his interviews on the afternoon of the assassination, there's some scribbly notes or whatever.
We talked about MSNBC. Let's talk on the Fox News side of things. So Tucker Carlson is basically saying that he spoke with someone who has firsthand knowledge of all of these classified documents. So that would have to be someone, what, at the National Archives or the CIA, basically? I mean, is that, or does the National Archives even have the documents that are classified?
Well, the National Archives is supposed to have whatever was reviewed by the ARB in the 90s that was put into the JFK collection. If there's other records that have not been put into the collection, then that's a violation of that statute.
So the 3,000 documents that are remaining, these are documents that were shown to the ARB and they agreed that they should be classified. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, that was their job. You know, I've really looked at this carefully. There wasn't any document that was turned over to the archives in the 90s that the ARB didn't review and make a determination on. Did they encounter resistance from agencies? Yes. So that the whole purpose of that analysis would say, okay, if you think this needs to be, you know, classified for another 10, 15, 20 years, okay, here's a recommendation. This is binding law because they had that authority to do that. So if there's still records in the collection that are being withheld and the president has not made a record by record certification with clear and convincing evidence under the standards of the act, then that's still a violation of that law.
What Tucker actually said was that they spoke to someone. So let me ask you this, the person they spoke to that had knowledge of these documents then. So it could be someone at the National Archives, could be someone at CIA, could in theory be someone who was on the ARRB in theory. I'm not saying it is at all, but I'm saying because they would have seen the document. I'm just saying, what's the universe of people who have seen these documents? Those are probably the three groups, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the ARRB, you know, they saw all these documents. They have a ethical obligation to not disclose what's in records that were legitimately withheld. But they also had recommended release dates that did not, in all likelihood, extend to 2017. They probably negotiated with the agencies and Congress, said, okay, 25 years, 2017 is, that'll look good. That'll look good. You know, we're going to have everything done by then. By 2017, if the agencies and the archivists and government offices, the executive branch had done their job from 1998 to 2017, we'd be looking at maybe a couple hundred records.
So Tucker's person he spoke with said point blank, the CIA did it. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest bombshell regarding the JFK assassination since the movie came out, at least, wouldn't you say, in terms of media and just the eyeballs that, you know, watch Tucker. Now, look, I posted MSNBC versus Fox, kind of what did they say on social media? I try to post a video every week. It's interesting to me and concerning a little bit is that the main, there's probably 30% of the feedback I got was Tucker's horrible. You love Trump because you even mentioned Tucker, and, you know, I don't believe Tucker and I hate you for, you know, bringing him on, you know, for talking, why are you platforming him, you know, and like, he doesn't already have a huge platform aside from my dozens of people that watch my stuff. I just worry about the case becoming politicized and being like another political issue, kind of like, you know, like stuff around COVID has been politicized, and, you know, so many things just get political. And it used to be that this was something that, and we talked about in the first episode of the podcast, 70% of independents and like 60% of Democrats and 60% of Republicans believe that there was a conspiracy in the JFK assassination. Do you share that concern when you know, you have the bombshell, but it's on Tucker? I suppose if the bombshell was on Morning Joe, then people would be like, left-wing propaganda, it's Morning Joe. Does it just not matter? Are there no more neutral arbiters? I don't, you know, it's a tough society to live in.
I mean, I don't really worry about right or left on this subject or pretty much anything anymore.
That's a based opinion, as the kids say, based.
I think why I'm working on this and focusing on this is I believe that 99% of Americans only care about every 4 years, an election, debates, Republican versus Democrat, who they're going to vote for. But I question whether it really matters. Mm-hmm. I do think that John F. Kennedy was the last president that actually tried to be president, and something sinister happened to him. With Trump and Biden, you know, I don't even believe it's their fault, you know, continuing to withhold these records. I don't think they have a choice. There's a lawsuit pending, and I really hope that they get some success there. And they're going to fight it tooth and nail. But I think at the end of the day, congressional oversight committees need to look at, just like they did in 92, after the release of a movie, like just do it. Like, don't let these agencies continue to run the country and bully mm-hmm. the elected officials, you know?
Yeah. And I think when it comes to the records, I think that the idea of disclosing all the records is a value that everyone shares. So if you're someone that thinks Gerald Posner's book is, you know, the way to go, and everything he says is correct, then you have the same interest in disclosing the records as someone who, you know, whose favorite book is by James D. Eugenio, right?
Correct.
And I even saw Posner tweet that the other day. He said, "Hey, you know, what are we doing? We got to release the rest of these documents." I mean, everybody, there seems to be a consensus that we need transparency. So I'm always in favor of transparency. So the fact that that's sort of getting into our bipartisan culture, I view as a very, very good thing, that everybody is for transparency.
Here. Yeah, it's something everybody can unite on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you're, you know, pro conspiracy, and, you know, I don't even like the term conspiracy
theory. I know. Created by the CIA in a memo. And then people say, you know, it wasn't created by the CIA. That's debunked. Fact check. Here's a usage of it in the year 1882. Here's another time it was used in this book in 1946. It's like, okay. But clearly it was popularized in the media after that. But anyway, much semantics and arguments. You have to figure out what people were really saying. And then you go, okay, yeah, sure. But you're it's the same thing. Anything else in terms of the JFK Records Act and where we go from here, Mark?
Well, I mean, there's a lawsuit that's pending. We just got a release of records from Biden on Thursday, but that the lawsuit to compel the rest of the records still has to run its course, and I hope that goes well. I hope that a federal judge, you know, sees the writing on the wall and does the right thing. I would like to see congressional oversight. You know, these it's funny to me how Congress in 92 or 91, I should say, when the movie did did such a remarkable act in passing that statute. And in 2022, when they know it's just as bad, if not worse, nobody wants to, you know, stick their neck out and reconvene a committee or a new ARB to finish the job on these things. There's nothing, there's not going to be, let's face it, Matt, there's not going to be a record in there that says who did it and why and how. We know a lot of those answers at this point, but it's just about transparency. There's an ongoing operation to continue to suppress evidence in this case. And I think what happened on Thursday was the Biden administration doing something maybe more than Trump did to look good to the media, but it's not even close to complete at this point.
Well, hey, thanks for coming on. Again, really appreciate it. Thank you for your time and your expertise on the JFK Records Act. And you talked about a lot of things, like I said, that are kind of ahead of where our knowledge base is on the podcast so far, being so early into it. You know what I'm going to say? You know what I'm going to say? The only way to figure out what happened is to look at each issue and all the evidence one by one and figure out what the arguments are and then weigh them all together. And that's what we're doing on this podcast. So, Mark, we appreciate you coming on.
Oh, you're doing great work, Matt, and I enjoyed it. This is important stuff for people to, you know, really learn what happened or what may have happened and what's going on now in almost 2023, and draw their own conclusions, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was Mark Adamczyk with us on the podcast today. We're going to be back with episode 5 on January 10th. We'll be taking a couple weeks off, hanging out with family. And maybe I can read some of these records that were recently released during that time. We'll see. Episode 5 is what will be out on January 10th. And we're going to look at how did Oswald get the gun into the building? So we'll be talking about Buell Wesley Frazier and all of that kind of fun stuff. And again, we're going to go issue by issue. So lots of episodes still to come. And 2023 is going to be a year that you're going to learn a lot about the assassination of John F. Kennedy if you listen to this podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next episode.